Welcome to Build, Lead, Thrive, Voices of Androscoggin, a bi-monthly podcast that features in-depth conversations with the people shaping Androscoggin County. Each episode dives into personal stories, showcasing the leaders and entrepreneurs behind the region's economic and community vitality. Hi, I'm your host, Shanna Cox, President and CEO of the LA Metro Chamber. I am joined by local talent, longtime friend, and our producer with incredible editing skills, Mr. Mark Turcotte.
You're only saying that because I turned an episode around in less than
a couple hours. It's exactly why I'm saying it. It's not only, it is precisely why I'm saying it. Untold talents, but Mr. Mark Turcotte, everybody. Together, we highlight the leaders and entrepreneurs building a stronger economy and vibrant community right here in our region, sharing stories of how they build, lead, and thrive. Today, we are joined by Dr. Betsy Libby. She's the president of the Central Maine Community College. From her start as a first-generation college student in Castine to leading one of Maine's most dynamic community colleges, Dr. Libby's story is one of growth, resilience, and impact. She's guided CMCC through enrollment increases, expanded programs, and new investments in facilities, all while keeping student success at the center of her leadership, which is maybe my favorite part of your story. We're excited to learn more about her journey, her leadership approach, and her vision for our community. Welcome, Betsy.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. That's just a small synopsis. We're going to get into your history a little bit, but a fun little side note, and I think this is the first time ever on this podcast that I've been able to say this in truth. Betsy and I go back all the way to high school. And we live in an area far from where we went to school that I almost never run into anyone that I ever went to school with and didn't know in my like adult life.
I think we go back a little further than high school. We did not go to grade school together. We live in a very small area where about 10 towns go to the same high school.
Yes.
And the first time our Girl Scout troop ever went camping was a torrential downpour.
And in Acadia.
And your Girl Scout troop was next to us, and you were making pineapple upside down cake and hamburgers and reloaded the vans and went home.
I do remember that
and
part.
And like truly aspired to be like your troop.
It's funny because I always pictured your van pulling away and being like, yeah, those idiots from Orland.
We're like,
sticking
enough.
It out in the rain.
Yeah.
That is pretty reminiscent of almost every camping trip that I've ever had to this day. This has been the first season without rain in most of my camping trips. But yeah, Girl Scouts, true. That's so true. I always think of high school, but we do. I talk about Girl Scouts a lot. I'm a lifetime member. I ended up getting my silver award. I love Girl Scouts. And I think this is why makes incredible leaders.
Yeah.
I always attest to that. Dr. Betsy Libby has been serving as president of the college since 2020, continuing a career at CMCC that began in 2006. Over the years, she's held key leadership roles, including director of admissions, dean of student services, dean of academic affairs, and vice president. She grew up in Castine. I grew up in Orland, so they're tiny little towns next to each other. And then got her bachelor's degree in journalism from the University of Maine. I love when we get your bios because I had no idea that your first degree was journalism. That's wild.
First two degrees.
Yeah, see, that's so then she got her master's degree with some public relations from Ball State University. Doctorate in higher education leadership from North Central University, where she focused on institutional effectiveness. And I see that part show up in your work all of the time. It's one of my favorite things about you. So before returning to Maine to raise her family, Betsy worked with the State University of New York system. At CMCC, she's helped lead the college through remarkable enrollment growth. I think we're going to touch on that today. Expanded academic and career training opportunities, and has overseen the significant investments in facilities and infrastructure. Her work is rooted in a passion for student success and employee development. Beyond campus, and I don't know how you get beyond all of that and off campus, but she's also active in the community. She serves on the boards of Maine & Company and the Greater Androscoggin Humane Society, previously chaired our own Chamber's Education and Workforce Development Committee, and you were honored with a Leading Through Change Award, which I had the pleasure of giving you a couple of years ago. Her and her husband, Jason, live in Gray with their two sons, where she is also, in her free time, involved in school and youth athletics. That's wild.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. You just managed to get all of that in a regular week.
You summed it up nicely.
Yeah. When somebody states it all like that, you really do have to step back and be like, yeah, I don't know how I do that. That's a really good point. Before we dive into Betsy's efforts at transforming CMCC, we want to get to know Betsy just a little bit, the person behind the role, in our segment that we like to call getting to know you. We're going to start just a few fun questions to help listeners get to know you a little better. So if you weren't leading a college, what other career might you have chosen?
Well, when I was younger and you're going through grade school and everyone says, oh, what are you going to be when you grow up? I always answered that I wanted to be Bo Duke. They never failed. The Dukes of Hazzard was my thing. But in all seriousness, I would have chosen to be a lawyer. Doing what I do now, I have opportunities where I'm working on real estate transactions or other types of scenarios.
Huge contracts.
Yeah, where I think that's pretty exciting, pretty thrilling. I like the research component and kind of the investigation component.
Yeah.
And so if I weren't a college president, I'd probably choose to be a lawyer.
Well, you are young enough, ma'am, that you could have a whole other career and you could still explore that someday. I think you would slay at that. So then what's a favorite hobby or activity that you do with your sons that helps you recharge? Can't pull from your cup more. It's got to charge you up a little bit.
So I get very recharged by watching them do their athletic things, going to their games and contests like that. I've been very fortunate that both my sons are extremely athletically talented. One of them is a Division I athlete. One of them is a senior in high school. Also a three-sport varsity athlete, has been the entire time that he was in high school. So our family is heavily committed to youth athletics. It's a ton of traveling. We go all over New England and beyond, airplanes to get them to where they need to be. And I never found it a task or, I wish I could just go home tonight. It just completely recharges me.
Yeah.
I do whatever I can to never miss it. And it's just, so exciting to me. I'm just very grateful.
What sports do they play?
Well, both of them do cross country in the fall, basketball in the winter, and outdoor track in the spring.
So at least they're aligned on their sports.
Aligned. They were always on the same team. So
that helps.
They're both boys. So we were super grateful to not have to divide and conquer and do all that. And I'm also super fortunate that when that time does come to an end, the college has extraordinary athletic programs.
So much so that you get to put welcome to the area champions on signs. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so we have the national basketball, women's basketball program for several states running, and those signs are at the Auburn borders. We also have our basketball team, our men's soccer team, which won last year, so we'll get the signs updated. We recently updated the sign at the college.
You're running out of space.
Because we ran out of space, and now we have a new sign, which was put in 2 weeks ago, I think, which has blank space for all the next national champions. But watching students participate in athletics will always be a part of my life, and it's part of my work. It's part of my job. I get to go watch our students. So when that no longer is part of my personal life with my own kids, I'll just make it to more college games.
That makes sense. Here's my question. A most relaxing dinner for you. Are you making it? Are you taking it out? Do you have a favorite restaurant? It's the kind that you relax with.
Yeah, our go-to and has been forever is Thai dish here in Auburn. And we, even when we lived in Auburn and even when they were open for sit-down meals, we still chose to take it out.
Yeah.
When family comes to visit, they ask, are we getting Thai dish? They used to not be open on Sundays, so we'd say, well, don't come visit Sunday.
Yeah.
Visitors plan their schedule. But without a doubt, Thai dish, just had it the other day. My son will text me, when he gets out of school, bring home Thai dish. Thai dish, hands down, the go-to.
I love that. I love it when you are so familiar with a place that you don't have to pull up the menu. You just make the phone call. Oh, Betsy, you want the regular?
Yep.
That's
exactly what it is. It's right in the phone and they answer with my name.
Yeah. See? Then that's definitely relaxing. Last quick question. What's one book, podcast, or TV show that you've been into lately?
Well, I just returned from London, so I'm going to actually say it was a lot of YouTube watching of tips and tricks and navigating the subway system. I spent months watching snippets of where to eat, where to avoid, what are things you might want to see when you're there that you're not going to read about in a tourist book. Just so much time, and all the videos saved, and would rewatch them, make sure I had it all laid out. So that is, I don't watch a lot of TV. I do read, but I don't watch a lot of TV. But recently, it does come to mind because I found myself in front of the screen at night, like figuring things out.
Going back to the research being a piece of things that you enjoy, that makes complete sense to me. We're going to start with build. This is where we talk about kind of the foundations. It's about how leaders create opportunities, strengthen institutions, and invest in people. I've, full disclosure, I serve on the foundations board for the college. And so I get to see Betsy in her element doing all of these things. And so I'm excited to have that conversation with you, because I don't think most folks know kind of, I would attribute a large portion of not just your skill set, but like your genius, like where I see you in your workflow, just like really humming along, is in kind of organizational building and effectiveness and systems and streamlining and tweaking. And like, you just, you're like a ballerina on the stage in the middle of the Nutcracker. Like, it's your element. So when you look back at your path from first generation student to college president, what are some of the experiences that helped build you, that shaped the way you now approach building an institution?
I learned very early on the value of just of hard work. I started working very early because I am a first generation college student. Neither of my parents went to college. My brother didn't go to college. But everyone is self-employed and runs successful businesses. But businesses are run out of the home. So, you know, from kindergarten on, as soon as we could answer the landline at home, we're taking messages for the family business. I got paid 25 cents for every message that was accurate on the little pink slip that you used to have on like receptionist desks. My brother could not get a message accurate. So I think the 25 cents was more inclination to get him to get things right. But just the like work ethic was instilled in me at such a young age. I came from a family where if you didn't go to work, you didn't get paid.
Yeah.
So things like that. I came from a family where saving was very important to have the type of opportunities that you want to have. So I think those are like lifelong lessons and values that help me build an institution. I also believe that the most important people in the organization are the people that make it run and make it work. At Central Maine Community College right now, currently, the person you want to ask is like the front desk person. They know everything. The maintenance people, you want to, you know, quickly become fast friends. They know everything. They're just the most helpful people. So making sure that you're involving folks at all levels of the organization in the growth of the organization. I think the other thing that runs pretty deeply in me is at Central Maine Community College, we're a state-funded organization. We also receive tuition. We also receive private grants. But we're taxpayer-funded for the most part. And just how taxpayer dollars are spent. I have a brother who's a lobsterman off the coast of Stonington. I have parents who are still running the family business out of our home in my childhood business. So I think twice about trips that we take. I think at the college. I think twice about meals that we're buying. Is there an agenda-driven value to this? So I'm a fairly frugal spender of taxpayer funds. People at the college would tell you it's my soapbox. I think we're great stewards of that, but that runs really deep in me, and that comes from being a first-generation college student.
Yeah, and knowing how much of a tax burden does fall on small businesses. Like, I think I see that all of the time, and I do appreciate good college tuition, free college tuition for its limited time, as long as we can get it. But I see that, and I think that the tempering of what's the vision we want to achieve, how much can we do it, and how do we do that as good stewards of resources, whether they're the human resources, like the really great folks that you just talked about, or the financial resources. Like, it's always coming from somewhere. How do we steward that smartly? It makes sense that stems from your roots, though. You've adapted significantly to meet the changing needs of students and employers. You were doing that before the pandemic, and then you had to really dig in during the pandemic. How has the process of adaptation shaped the college's growth and kind of the direction that you're heading in now?
Ironically or not, I became the president, interim president, in August of 2020. And if you remember, in August of 2020, you didn't know what September of 2020 would bring at the end.
I think
of-
I was still like disinfecting cardboard boxes before I brought them, right? Like that's the, just to get us back into the bananas mind frame we were in.
And at the end of every day, if you went to work to the physical workplace, you would bring home your belongings because you didn't know if you were going back the next day. The vaccine wasn't available. If your child was a close contact, that meant you weren't going anywhere for 14 days. Mm-hmm. You know, you just didn't know. So you brought in your office, you brought home your office, mm-hmm. and everyone did. We had to quickly become adaptable then. We had to teach plumbing online. We'd teach automotive with kits that students picked up at scheduled times, so there was never more than like one student, and you had to like leave it and wave to the student. So it was really informative and just kind of ironic that I became president at the time, because we were forced to adapt. So there were things that we were made to do because we had to run a business with the rules that we had to run it under. Housing was a challenge. Only one person per bedroom. They could not associate. Masking all the time. And just kind of figuring that out while taking care of each other and the families that entrusted us with their students. We did a really good job after some of that was winding down and getting over about like, well, what worked?
Yeah.
Like what's a new, better way of doing things that maybe we were forced to do, but now we learned from. I think for students who online education was not an option, or they didn't have confidence that they could do it, and then they were forced to do it, they realized I can do it. So that helped students. We obtained more students who were able to learn from afar, didn't have to come to campus. Mm-hmm. I think that we certainly became a more flexible organization, flexible in our offerings. You know, instead of 15-week courses, there'd always been 8-week courses, but then we got into like 4-week courses, hybrid courses, just a combination of things, a lot of credit for work that's previously been done with prior learning. So I think that we've always like been an adaptable organization, but COVID really did force its way with us. Mm-hmm. And the outcomes of COVID, some of them were very positive for us in being able to just do things new ways. We also were very fortunate to receive funding through the Harold L. Fund Foundation to the Maine Community College System for the Center for Workforce Development, which really brought upon resources that the college had never had in offering short-term workforce trainings. Students who participate in those trainings aren't eligible for federal financial aid because it's not an academic degree.
Yeah.
And it can be hard to leave your workplace, have to pay for a training while you're not getting paid. We're very lucky in this area that we have a lot of employers who do support students through tuition reimbursement and things like that. But through the Harold L. Fund donation to the Maine Community College System, that is free training for Mainers over 18 years old and older. So we were able to adapt new programs, for example, welding, which we never, ever would have been able to do without that funding, building up the lab, bringing students in for these 4-week cohorts so they can get certifications that then go better their employment or become employable.
Yeah.
I think that funding that we received has just completely changed the organization. Dr. Dwayne Conway leads that organization for us. I actually think he's in the building at a Strength in LA meeting.
You just passed him an hour ago. Yeah, that's exactly right.
But I mean,
right.
just this summer alone, he submitted nearly 20 new applications for short-term workforce trainings to provide new opportunities to Mainers over 18 in our region that we never, ever could have done.
I also just want to call out, because I think I joined the board right after you took your leadership role. And I also had only become president here, I don't know, like 5 or 6 months before that. And in all of the challenges that the pandemic created, and for some people paralyzed them and their organizations or businesses, some of us had this really unique opportunity to come in into an institution that is a very storied, very legacied institution, and have the pandemic's kind of catalyst for change wind in our sails to carry out changes. Is there one change that you got to implement as a result of kind of that it's okay to pilot, try, fail, try again stage that the pandemic created for us that you are super proud of?
I think I'm going to go two ways. So for students, it was how we deliver education.
Yeah.
So, you know, online simulation. That opens a whole bunch of doors for people who can't spend 8 hours in the lab every Tuesday and Thursday, but they can do some online work through a simulation software, and then they can come in for a scheduled time on a Friday afternoon and then demonstrate to the instructor on the actual piece of equipment what they're able to do. That just opened up the opportunity for more people to enroll in programs because the time commitment had changed, and the way we assessed the skill had allowed people to do not have to commit to those day-long labs. And then the other one will be for employees. Yeah. Many of our employees are super successful working remote, you know, no concerns. And we have the technology where we're able to do that in some of our areas, and some of our areas we just can't.
Yeah.
But our ability to be flexible with employee schedules, I think, has really changed, and to like work around family commitments or bus schedules to keep a good employee.
Yeah.
Like the doors just open to a lot of people. You know, that was a change that occurred. We currently do now a flex scheduling situation where employees pick their own hours, really. But there are certain business hours where offices are covered. But as long as there's an employee covering your office that day, we have people that might work a schedule of 4-10s, some people that may have some remote days. Many people have chosen to just stick with the typical 40-hour work week coming in. That's what their schedule allows. But there's just a little bit of flexibility there. So we let employees pick their own hours, which is some basic guiding principles. So I think for the students, it was educating, it was opening up the different opportunities of how we deliver education. And for employees, it was just where you can perform your work from.
Yeah. Is there any success story from a student? I get to go to your annual awards every year, and there's always these incredible student stories that are beautifully told too and collected. But I just know there's so many out there. Is there one particular story that like drives you or pulls you into your kind of best spot as a leader that keeps you going?
There are so many.
Yeah.
And
this is like pick your favorite child.
as you stated the question, I was thinking of our annual awards event where we highlight really students' stories and their determination and their grit. Just as you know, often is there a dry eye in the room by the end of the night.
I don't know why I don't remember to bring napkins or tissues to this event. Like, you've got to start putting them out. It's like I don't know, branded swag little tissue holders, because
it's a great idea.
Every year,
to look into that.
Every year.
And those are just the students that get selected.
I know.
There's a zillion more that get nominated. So it's hard to narrow it down to one. I'll say just this past weekend, I got an email from a student who is with us right now, thanking me for recognizing their abilities. And what had happened is I had started a new program called the Student Ambassador Program. Students sit in an area at a very central location, and their job is to bring people to where they need to be so no one gets lost. We have lots of entryways at the college to get to where you need to be, and not always clear, and there's no reserved parking. Park wherever you want. So these students serve as ambassadors. They answer questions. They do some work on the side. And I had seen a student and said, you would make a great ambassador. Do you know anything about that program? And they didn't. It was brand new. I brought them to the person who was supervising. They got hired. They started that day. And I got an email this weekend that said, because of that experience, the rest of their time at the college was changed. They became like a whole new person.
Yeah.
People knew who they were. Whenever they couldn't go anywhere without someone not knowing their name, vice president, deans are calling them by first name in the hall. And just that they wouldn't have had the same experience at the college for not being selected for that leadership role. And I give that one just because it's the most recent story that I can think of.
Also because it's so good.
But there are just so many, many stories. I think facilities-wise, with expanding, we lease Center Street Value Inn starting for the academic year.
I'd forgot what its real name was.
And because of that, we have students that can come to college because we've expanded housing. So many students that wouldn't be able to enroll unless those additional housing opportunities were available. Yeah. So there's just, the expansion has just led to more opportunity.
Yeah. Mustang Hall, as it's called these days.
Yes.
But I drove by it just the other day and I was like, I remember when that was a hotel. Because it doesn't even...
I think it was a hotel last week.
Yeah,
we just took our lease back over. So
I love that. Let's shift to leadership. We like to explore the choices and challenges of guiding teams and communities and organizations through change. You've been recognized for that, leading through change before. You've led on education and workforce issues, both on campus and here through our workforce and education work. How do you see the role of higher education in, addressing, because I don't say there's no like silver bullets out there, but in addressing workforce challenges here in Androscoggin County or further? I know so many of your graduates are working beyond the borders of our county, but
yeah. Central Maine Community College is actually responsible for serving four counties. So Franklin, Oxford, Lincoln, which is weird because you have to drive through Sagadahoc, yeah, and Androscoggin County. So all of our programming must extend that far. And the programming looks different in each region based on the regional need.
Yeah.
So the first thing, our first responsibility is to be in tune with employers. So that's really where our program advisory boards come in. They meet twice a year. They're industry experts that meet with the faculty experts on our campus in that field. So knowing, for example, like what is the latest technology that you expect from a student? How much do you expect them to know? What are you not using anymore that we shouldn't be using either?
Yeah.
And a perfect example of that is Harriman said, you know, your students need to have more experience in Revit. Okay, no problem. It's a design software. So we did that.
Yeah.
And they need less experience in this. You know, that's not an expectation of an entry-level employee at our organization. We get those kind of examples just every day. So it's really being in touch and in tune with employers. And this is where our workforce division that I mentioned previous comes into helping Androscoggin County. Not every organization is able to release employees for 15 weeks, for a full semester, for 2 years.
Yeah.
But there's someone that needs experience in supervising people or grant management or things like that. And so our workforce division that puts together these very short-term offerings are viable for employers to release an employee to come to work and to get that skill for the organization. So it becomes being nimble, being flexible, and we, at community colleges, we're kind of like everything to everybody.
A little bit.
So we've got your
traditional... It's a tall order.
We have your traditional high school student that wants to come, have the residence life experience, play the athletics or not, be involved in the student council, be an elected officer, go to all the student activities. You know, they want to do it all. They're having the true college experience. And then we have another student who's there for the Excel spreadsheets class to apply for a promotion.
Yeah.
And so we try to figure out how that all works, meet both where they need to be. It's super hard to measure success where we are because it's not always a degree.
Yeah.
And we don't always know that because you were able to put that experience that we offered you on your resume, did that get you your next job?
Yeah.
You know, we don't, that's hard to measure.
Well, and it might be one or two classes and not even a specific certificate program because they just need a specific skill.
Yep. So in terms of helping the region with workforce issues, it comes down to knowing what employers need.
Yeah, staying connected. Mm-hmm. It's just such a fresh way of thinking.
It's always
about
been like
it.
A thing in higher education, and I think that USM did a great job before we were really super into it, and they'd have all these advertisements, and you'd hear about it, and get credit for what you know, and get credit for what you did. And they were, you know, really doing some great work. We were the fortunate recipients of a grant in 2013, solely focused on credit for prior learning. So I think that's where we really came into our own. So just a little bit over a decade ago, where we were trying to like figure things out, look at national best practices, had someone dedicated to the project. So now we have a prior learning assessment matrix where you can look online and see if a certain licensure or a certain, you know, skill in cosmetology, a certain certificate you might have earned along the way, where that could be applied for credit. And if that doesn't already exist on the list, you can put in an application to say, well, I have this credential. It's not on your list. And we vet that. And then once it goes on the list, it stays on the list until something changes. So the folks that already have a credential that's on the list, very little work. They just have to produce the credential.
Yeah.
The ones that want us to look into it, and we have some work to do there. But it is a relatively new thing that we're probably a little late to the game on, quite honestly.
It doesn't feel that way. It feels like you were right on time.
All right.
Anyway, you could spread that word is all I'm saying. I think there's other folks who could benefit from that piece. We're talking about this already, that you're just a key partner in career training. What are the industries or the opportunities that you're most excited about preparing students for right now? And just as a time marker, right now is like semester's about to start. And so how's enrollment going along with that? How are you seeing kind of these areas relate to each other?
So the one that's top of mind is building construction, just because it's top of mind around the state. Mm-hmm. So the 80,000 homes by 2030. I think August 9th, maybe there was an article in the Sun Journal about 13,000 homes needed in Auburn.
Yeah.
And we have hear from employers all the time, like, can't hire people because there's nowhere for them to live.
100%.
We experience the same kinds of things. People that come from away expect the cost of living here is going to be less than it really is.
Yeah.
And so they're somewhat shocked by that. Plus, landlords can be a little bit selective now. There's wait lists. So just providing the housing that's needed. And we have a very long-standing building construction program, super traditional program. And then we have a second offering where students, it's a co-op model. So students come to school for 8 weeks, and then they're based with an employer. Very local employers, but people like Callahan Construction, for 8 weeks, and then back to us for 8 weeks, and back to the employer for 8 weeks. And they do that cycle for 2 years to earn the associate degree. And while they're on the sites with the employer, we require they are paid, and the employer at each 8 week increment is required to meet certain learning outcomes that we're expecting them to get when they're with you. So just, I'm really excited about what we might be able to do to help boost the housing industry in Maine. Our department chair in the program is also very excited.
Yeah.
You know, a challenge with building construction is it's not a licensed trade.
Yeah.
So sometimes we have students who come and they get the skills that they need, and then they go get in, they get employed. They don't graduate with us because they're getting employed.
They don't need the degree
for the license, and they don't want to take the last writing class or the last math class or whatnot. So just working through with our subject matter experts of how we can have a greater impact on the industry. Our course is set up in the right time. Are they the right time of day? Are they the right sequence? Are they the right time of year?
Mm-hmm.
Are there certain core skills that a company is looking for 10 employees to get? And how might we deliver that that's not in a 15-week semester? Because they can't lose their workforce for that length of time. So I think building construction is just top of mind of what we could do. There's so much need, and we have the resources, I think, to do things differently there. And those are active conversations at the college, and our faculty member is just full of ideas.
So I'm so glad to hear you say that. So I come from a blue collar family, and I've raised a household of blue collar boys who I still occasionally have to feed. And the conversation that we have, so I have one kiddo who's in the electrical trade. I've got one who's in the roofing trade. I've got one who's in a landscaping trade, and one that I'm handing off to you next week to figure out his way in life. And we've had this conversation a lot because I come home and I talk about the housing goals, how important it is to economic development, how it's really one of the biggest workforce restrictors. I've seen it be a retention issue as well as a recruitment issue. And so we have these conversations around the dinner table. And for the first time ever, one of my kids looked at me and said, well, Mom, most of the trades have apprenticeships and formal programs, and there isn't one for like general construction, not general labor. And I had never thought about it before that, like, if you're in electric, if you're in HVAC, if you're in plumbing, if you're in welding, right, there's clear apprenticeship programs, there's clear pathways, but it feels like if you want to go into construction, that's what my kid had said his sophomore year of school, and said, Mom, I'm gonna go into construction, that it's like, find someone who's hopefully good and work with them, right? And so are you guys expanding that program? Do you hear the demand for it?
We absolutely hear the demand.
Yeah.
The enrollment is very strong, and it's super high. The students who come back year after year, the retention rate is really high. Where we fall off a little bit is that last semester where they're like, I'll take the last construction classes, but maybe not, you know, the writing that I need or what. You know, they're hands-on on folks. They want to be out doing that, and they're employable. There's no issues not being employed while you're in school in this field. Sometimes the employer wins out when it comes to more hours or taking the last English. Our employers in this region, though, are very supportive of a credential, of a fully educated citizen of the other courses that they have to take. So they do partner with us on this co-op program that we have. It's called the Job Site Track Program, where they're meeting our requirements, getting this employee every other 8 weeks, paying them. We require a high level of liability insurance for the student to be on the job site. We have some very, very strong employer partners in that program, large construction companies. Where students are just getting opportunities that we can't offer them, you know, in our lab. So we're trying to look at ways that we can expand that program. Some, not all students can go right out in that program on day one. And the other challenge with our construction program is students arrive at us at different spots. So some of our local, our local tech centers, our CTEs around the state, have dynamo construction programs, you know, building houses, and this is a student's experience. Another student arrives and they, you know, what is a hammer?
Yeah, so they weren't in the technical program.
And so we're trying, we have to, you know, those students all show up on day one. So these programs are meant a little bit to meet them where they're at, not hold someone back who already has a strong skill set. We do a digital portfolio in that program where if students believe they've already met a certain skill set, they produce photographs and then they come and they demonstrate it. Like, we don't want you to sit in the class either if you already know how to do this. In this program, the students really separate really quick. The ones who've had the skill have the interest and they become the helpers to the other students. And it's the almost like the teacher's assistants, if you will. And that's part of what they like doing. They're showing students how to utilize the skills that they have learned along the way. So building construction, I'm just very excited that we have a faculty member who is as intrigued as I am about, well, let's look at what we're really doing. And is it is it the best we can do to serve industry? And like, what more is there to do? And he is very good at instilling in the students. And this is a profession. Although we're not a licensed profession right now, we are this is a profession. We take pride in our work. And he's very good at instilling the soft skills. You might be the best construction student there is to be hired, but if you can't show up on time, communicate, produce accurate work, measurements matter.
Small.
So
Mark's face, everybody, is like, I have learned that lesson a time or two.
So we already have a really strong program, but the state's needs are just so great. So taking a look at, you know, what could we do differently to maybe help out a little bit more than we are.
You got recognized for leading through change, and you've talked about some of those changes, but you didn't talk about what it takes from you and to do it, and having witnessed you in those moments, but also having led in those moments, what sustained you?
Being a leader, as you know, the one guarantee is someone's not going to like the decision you made or how you went about it or whatnot. You have to learn really early on how to handle that. It's pivotal to your success as a leader. Some people are louder when they don't agree, and some are softer. And you know, I actually appreciate the loud people. We're on the, you're telling me we're being transparent, we're communicating, versus the people who aren't communicating with me but are telling other people.
That is the worst. That is the worst.
You know, there's not a lot I can do about that. So I think there's just a skill set, and you have to be built a certain way to be able to keep on moving. You gotta keep solutions-based focus, clear communication. I think being a clear communicator, you know, I call it the gift of no. I name it that. Actually, a faculty member who's retired said, you just offer the gift of no. You say, no, we are not going to do that. We're not moving in that direction. She said to me, that's a gift. I don't have to think about it anymore. I don't have to put any more work in it. You know, you're not saying, we're going to table that to next time. If the answer is no, you tell us. And not everyone is receptive to that. I try to provide rationale and reason. We're not going to argue about the rationale and reason, but I'll provide you the reasons. I'll listen to your feedback. I show up to situations trusting that we both are there for good reasons, maybe different reasons. We have different reasons of wanting to do what we want to do. I'm very fortunate at Central Maine that almost always student success. What is best for the student is the reason we're at the table. Mm-hmm. We just disagree on what that is sometimes. To lead, you have to figure out how to put all the noise aside and sort out what is noise. And you know what I mean. If you've lived it, you know it. You know where the first email is coming from. Sometimes you just know. But that takes a while. It's not not for everybody.
Yeah.
Making decisions is not easy. You know, the worst decision I have to make is if we're going to open on a snow day.
I feel that.
Oh, my God.
The impact of yours is so much more amplified than mine. But I always, like, every time I'm making that call, I'm like, thank God I'm not a superintendent.
So, you know, as I mentioned, we serve all these outlying counties. So I have students that are coming to the college from Rumford, Farmington.
Yeah.
The weather is drastically different in Damariscotta than it is in Farmington.
Yeah. And some wild back roads to both.
You know, students that aren't driving vehicles that have the tires that I'm able to have.
Yeah.
They're just that is the worst decision.
It's so real.
I do not know what I go through. I've always wanted to know,
what does it look like to make that decision? Do you, like, set an alarm, get up at 3 a.m. and start, like, how early does that process start?
It starts,
set a timeline of, like, when the decision has to be made?
It can, yes, we have all of the things. So
I want to know.
I have a faculty.
Give us a peek behind the curtain. This is always been my biggest
faculty member at work that about 2 months ahead of time, you know, there's going to be a storm on January. I like, always make sure I know when the incoming storm is. So tell them, yep, I'm all set. So it can depend on the storm.
Yeah.
Some are no-brainers.
Yeah.
The worst is the
Ice?
Three to
is
six
it wet?
Inches.
Is
oh,
it?
Ice is awful. But, you know, the 3 to 6 inches. Okay, is that 3 to 6 inches over a 15-hour spread?
Yeah.
Is that 3 to 6 inches at our primary commute time within
Correct.
A two-hour spread?
Yeah.
You know, different facts make different cases. And that's what I always have to say. Well, we don't understand why you closed the other day when it was 3 inches, but you didn't close today. Well, that was 3 inches of ice.
Like, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You know, different facts make different cases.
Yeah.
But we make a decision by 5:30 in the morning. And we actually consult. I have a meteorologist calls me at 4:55. That's my time.
Do you set your alarm for, like, 4:45?
Yep.
So you get a couple of sips of coffee
alarm,
in to pick that phone up?
I'm a the meteorologist I work with is not Todd Gunter, but I'm a huge Todd Gunter fan.
Yeah.
So I got to see what Todd has to say. He's generally pretty reasonable. So I get up, I figure it out, but I've, like, done my homework the night before.
Yeah.
I'm like literally on the basketball bench at my kids' games at the timeouts, checking what schools have already closed, you know? Just trying to there's just no good decision.
Yeah. Well, for me, because I employ a lot of parents, and many of your students are also parents. I don't know if folks realize kind of the demographics of the college, but a lot of folks are already in life while they're also learning. And for me, are my employees losing their childcare coverage for the day? Is school closed for them? Is not a small, like, just, it is not enough that they can get to the office safely. It's not enough to say, come in an hour later and take your time, because then there's other factors that, like, no, you should just work remote today because you're clearly doing at-home schoolwork or whatever your school does. But, like, that is always a big factor for me.
And for us, we're training nurses. We're training police officers.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to go to work when it snows.
Yeah.
So that's a concept we talk about, too. It's funny because I make far greater, more, like, much larger decisions than that, but that, and those ones are just more clear to me. That one is just the worst.
Yeah. Well, and you're going to get a lot more feedback for that than the price you negotiated on that contract.
Everybody has an opinion on that
one. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't envy that.
So, yeah.
I'll add you to the list of people I say, thank God I'm not that person on snowstorm days.
I mean, I am up at, like, everyone knows I'm for 3 days out.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you think we're going to do? You'll know by 5:30 on the day.
Yeah, because you can't call it in advance.
Yeah.
And the times you think you do, you look like a complete idiot.
If it's a huge one, we will. Like, if it's a huge one, the state shut down, everyone.
Blizzard conditions.
Yes, we will.
Sure. Right. Everyone loves a good advance notice. But those six inch ones are really tricky. And, like, is it supposed to be 6 inches, but 2 degrees is going to make it all rain? Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not calling that the day before. We always like to end with thinking about the thrive component, and this is also about how you sustain yourself, what success looks like, and how leaders see the future of their work and their community. And so How do you personally sustain energy and balance in a role that demands so much? I know we're going full circle to your bio, but how do you do it?
I think some of the skills that I already mentioned are very helpful in terms of, you know, I try to communicate clearly with folks. So we don't have to spend our energy wondering. You don't have to wonder what I'm thinking. If I have questions, I'll ask you what you're thinking. Because that is how a lot of noise is created, and it can get into your energy when the communication's not clear. So that I take time for myself. I love water type activities, a pool, a boat, you know, so I make sure to like schedule that stuff in. Really good at like managing, balancing time, and that might mean that, you know, I'm pretty productive late at night.
Yeah,
that's a really good time for me to get caught up on things or get some planning done. Doesn't always work around the traditional schedule. So like work when you're most on.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that the communication piece is just so important to the energy and the balance.
Yeah, it's funny. I put in a lot of emphasis on communication. That's where I lead from too, but I've never thought about it through that lens. And it makes so much sense that sometimes when energy is low, whether it's mine or whether it's the team's, and managing the team and its low energy is going to get me to a low energy space. It usually is resolved with like thinking about what communication needs to happen. And clear communication is a good principle in general, but I've never thought about it as part of my strategy for taking care of my own energy stores. That's really great advice.
Yeah.
That's, I've never thought about that. I mean, I know that it's important, but I've always thought it was important for others and not as a means for self.
Yeah, no, I think it's super crucial. Again, like the gift of no, like we might not agree, but you know where I am. I know where you are. No one has to wonder. Like that headspace doesn't have to be used to like wonder what we're doing next, wonder where you're at, wonder what you're thinking. And that frees up headspace for other things.
Yeah. That was the gift of no was probably my hardest leadership lesson to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it's not about shutting people down, but it is about allowing
a lot of times
to
it comes down
on.
To resources. It's not that's not a great idea. It's not that I wouldn't love to do that. That's, we just don't have those resources right now, so I don't want you to spend any more of your time and energy pursuing this thing that is just not going to happen right now.
Yeah,
and most people are thankful. Okay, I'll spend my time on something that will have impact.
Yeah, so. No, that's exactly right. What do you see as the greatest opportunities ahead for CM as it relates to this region? I mean, you talked a little bit about housing. You haven't talked about some of the great healthcare career pathways, which you guys, I mean, I know you couldn't talk about everything, even if we tried.
No, we can talk about healthcare right now. This is a really good one. So nursing.
Yeah.
So a nursing shortage across the state.
It's been a huge way that you're contributing.
And then housing becomes an issue for getting traveling nurses. Mm-hmm. The cost of traveling nurses to hospitals is quite extraordinary. So we're recently, we're several years in on a nursing expansion project, and that's the Maine Community College system. And I happen to lead the project for the whole system. So we're working with Northern Light and Maine Health, where they have funded some opportunities for us to expand programs. And every college did something different based on what their capacity was and what their resources were and kind of what the needs of their regional employers were. Eastern Maine Community College did a lot of work in their rural hospitals like Greenville and things like that. What we did at Central Maine Community College was we started a nights and weekends program that has a spring start. So we had never had a spring start program. So if you didn't do well in a nursing program or you had to leave for maybe a family medical emergency and didn't complete the course, you had to wait a whole year to repeat it because it wasn't offered again. And that can get you out of the cycle, and you maybe can't wait. And we also didn't have a nights and weekends option, but most new nurses get nights and weekend shifts.
Yeah.
So, it's different going into a patient's room when they're sound asleep in the middle of the night and just learning that skill set.
Yeah.
So we started the nights and weekends program a couple of years ago, and I think that's a good way to serve, the industry in the area. We're you know, Central Maine Medical Center is a good partner to us. We work with the College of Health Professions quite regularly. We share clinical times and you know, collaborate and things like that. When there was the cybersecurity attack at the hospital, and then they needed to use resources to finish out like testing for their students and other computer resources, they came over, the College of Health Professions came over and used our resources. And so we both have nursing programs, but I wouldn't say they're in competition because there's so many nurses are needed that we both need to have them, and we were really well together. And students do their clinical rotations at the hospital here mostly, but they go other places as well. But definitely our nursing expansion program, we still do have seats in our nursing program. There are a few prerequisites that have to be met. You get your RN degree in 2 years, which is pretty phenomenal. So you do have to come in having already had some core work done, or you know, the ability to be at a certain level.
Who comes into an RN? Is it a CNA? Is it a medical assistant? Can it be a whole bunch of...
All of the above.
Yeah.
Yep. So most often it's someone who's had some type of healthcare, you know, experience, whether it be a CNA or they worked in a different role in a hospital. But other times it was just always a passion, or as people said, you'd make a good nurse. So, so they come. Nursing is you're going to be employed. You're going to have a livable wage. You're going to have your choice of where you want to work. Mm-hmm. You're not going to have to worry about being employed. Nursing is a very good choice, particularly for someone who's rooted here and can't move, doesn't want to move. You know, there's going to be jobs for you. Our nursing program has just a huge diversity of students that runs the gamut on diversity, from age of the students, background, gender. There's no one answer to that question.
Yeah, that's incredible.
And medical assisting, some people start the nursing program and they realize, oh, that's not what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And many of the courses early on can be used in medical assisting. So medical assisting, there is crossover there.
Yeah.
And a lot of our current students are medical assistants. Like, I'll go to the hospital and they're serving as the medical assistant. So it's a lot of different types of folks.
It is such a, you're right, no one will ever be unemployed if they're in the nursing profession. And nurses, RNs, aren't just showing up in hospitals. They're in home health programs, they're in hospice programs, they're in community programs.
Schools.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's an area that we've needed in expansion. It's interesting because healthcare and construction are two pathways that we focus on too. And it's not funny, it's data driven, and right, like we've worked, both of us have worked really hard at leaning into the areas that our region needs, and the adding the nights and weekends is transformative.
And the our local hospitals are very good at coming over, talking to students. They do a wonderful tuition reimbursement program. They'll come over and talk about job opportunities. They generally bring food and pizza.
Yeah, they're happy to have
access.
They're
on campus. They're regular partners of our nursing faculty. Many of our nursing faculty work at a local hospital during the summer months or in off hours. They keep up their nursing skills. So,
So then what's one piece of advice that you might give to students or young professionals that are aspiring to lead?
It goes back to the piece that you have to be comfortable being uncomfortable.
Yeah.
If you are worried about who likes you or doesn't like you, if that is like if that cripples you almost, if you can't get those thoughts out of your head, it's not, if you're too worried about that, it's probably not like a good fit for you.
Yeah.
We have to be comfortable being uncomfortable. And that simply might just be saying, I don't know the answer to that. Yeah. There's no expectation that you know the answer to everything. Or I don't know the answer to that, I'll get back to you. Or kind of being someone, you're being caught on the spot and you don't know the answer. And so you say, well, I haven't really thought about that, let me get back to you. Or people disagreeing with your decisions, or having to make difficult decisions that you know
impact people,
are going to not go well. Mm-hmm. Having to have a conversation with maybe an employee or a student that is not a positive conversation. It can be as simple as, you know, having a conversation about workplace performance or something that maybe a student has done which is not, you know, becoming for them, and wanting to help them out with that. But you have to be comfortable being uncomfortable. It really I think that sums up that way. Because if you're not, then
I think that's right.
Yeah, it's not. It's probably just you wouldn't be happy.
Yeah.
And it's not that I'm happy being uncomfortable. No way is that how what I'm trying to say. It's just like I've learned what that feels like, and life goes on.
Yeah, yeah. No, we've had a lot of conversations, even amongst our own team, about the difference between like doing well at your job, doing well at managing, and then being a leader. And I think the part that it does always come back to is like how you handle when things don't go well, when it's not what you wanted, when it's not feeling smooth or comfortable, and I don't know that folks can figure that out till they've tested it.
Yeah. I think 'cause the question was focused on like, what would you tell a younger person or, you know, maybe like a newbie? Get off the email.
Yeah.
Pick up the phone.
Yeah.
Go for the cup of coffee.
Yeah.
Don't fire back. Just all those kinds of lessons that you learn along the way.
Email can be so debilitating.
Yeah.
It can
be taken like in any way. It just, some of the emails I sent an email the other day, it had an exclamation point and I was being like excited about something. And someone was like, oh, were you mad at me? There was an exclamation point. I'm like, no, I thought it was like a level of excitement. So the technology can, as we, you know, it's all about relationships and sometimes the technology is so helpful in that area and sometimes it's just a hindrance. And just because you can send an email doesn't mean you should send an email.
Say that again.
And I have to say to a lot of people I supervise, some senior employees, I have to say, get off the email. This is not something to be emailed. Go find whoever it is that we're working with here and have a conversation.
We do. We've leaned so heavily into email for so long. And you just don't know. You don't always know what it's going to look like. Before I close us out with some reflection, Mark always does a great job making some notes, having some questions. Anything that...
I wanted to ask you about enrollment.
Oh, okay.
Because it seems like you've been breaking records annually.
Like year over year.
Yes.
Yes. My enrollment is currently my favorite topic. So we start school on Tuesday, the day after Labor Day, and we are currently up 12% over where we were last year.
Which was up over the year before that.
And so essentially we had robust enrollment for about 10 years from like 2008 on. And then it was beginning to be flat. And there was a saying at the campus that flat is the new up. And then COVID hit and we had a couple of difficult years just because our housing numbers were so limited and just all the rules. You could only come to campus if you had to work on a certain piece of equipment at a scheduled time. And so that was nationwide. And we certainly did not suffer more than anyone else. And then we rebounded really quick. So in 2023, we passed 4,000 students for the first time ever. And then in 2024, some people, we're going to pass 5,000, we're going to pass 5,000. That's a huge, from 4,000 to 5,000 in 1 year. And our campus is not big.
Yeah.
We got roughly 4,800 students last fall. And so this year, we're up 12% over that. So for the past 3 years, we've had incremental enrollment increases. 700 students in a year, and just to be up that much is just absolutely speaks volumes to our team. This is a group of people. We have a new student information system, not going as well as we had hoped right now. A lot of hurdles. Things take
new information
little bit,
systems
a little
are
bit longer,
hard, man. They are.
But our team is just—they've had so many events this summer to either recruit new students, admit students, get students who are already in the mix to avoid what we call summer melt. So they show up when fall classes started. We had registration days, admittance day sessions. Last week we had what were called admitted student days, broken down by program major, where hundreds of students came last week. And that's going to alleviate some pressure when they show up for class on Tuesday. Yeah. Sometimes our biggest hurdle is a student, and I don't want to maybe stereotype here, but an adult student who shows up on the first day of class, parking lot's full, people are walking around, and they don't get out of the car. Yeah. This was not what it was like when I came in June right. and registered for the class. So getting that, it's just, it's too much. So getting people out of their vehicles into the hallways, we try to get people here all summer and like last week so we can alleviate some of that. We're open Labor Day because we start the next day just to alleviate any last minute questions. Get your books, get your ID, pay your bill, find out about your bill, walk around, walk with your schedule, find your classes. So enrollment is flourishing, and that is so much credit to our team. It takes a village. Mm-hmm. So, you know, our admissions department, which everyone thinks of as the front door, is then handing off students appropriately to our advising department, which mm-hmm. is registering them, handing them off appropriately to our faculty advisor, or maybe like a TRIO student support advisor, a housing expert, someone in athletics if they're, you know, making a relationship with a coach, just like all the liaisoning that goes around between the departments and true hand-holding. You're not being told, well, you have to now go get your student ID. It's around the corner. Take a left. Go down the first flight. There, let me take you to get your student ID. We can't give anyone any excuses to think they can't do it. And sometimes just getting lost on the way to get your ID is like enough for someone. They're looking for excuses. Like enough for someone to say, I can't do this. So it's truly our team. Our housing is full again. So we have two apartment buildings, two residence halls. We lease Center Street Value Inn, which is Mustang Hall. And we have a wait list of, as of noon today, of 50 students who are actively seeking housing for the fall in order to come. Our biggest growth in enrollment was actually high school students in early college.
Yeah.
So we decided 2 years ago to invest in an early college coordinator position. We never had someone that was solely focused on it. It was just a part of a lot of people's jobs. But the dean of enrollment management made a case to me that, you know, early college is our largest program. And no one like owns it. And it's also like the hardest program to really communicate with because there's students from all these high schools, different guidance counselors, different school schedules. We need someone to go visit, you know, the schools. We just have a lot of people that do different parts of it. But imagine if someone owned it. And that was, I would say, listening to him in that moment was one of the better decisions I probably made because it just paid off dividends. So last year we had our increase in 700 students was hugely attributed to our concurrent enrollment in early college programs. We have 6 brand new programs starting next week that faculty wrote over the course of last year. Those range from communications and new media to pre-engineering, data science, metal fabs, you know, a bunch of things there. Every year for the past few years, we've started 2 or 3 new programs. Well, we haven't really eliminated anything. We might have tweaked a pathway to better serve the region, but our enrollment is alive and well, I'll say.
How many more students can you fit?
Yeah, so that's a difficult question.
How many more can that labor program build more buildings?
So no more if they want housing, but I get fortunate that a lot of our growth has come from the high school students who don't ever actually come to campus. So they're taking the course with us either as part of their high school day. The high school instructor is teaching our curriculum during the day at someone's class. A high school student knows they're in a college class, but it's just part of their high school schedule. Yeah. And sometimes a student comes to us and takes a class with other college students. There's all different kinds of opportunities for the high school students depending where they live and what they want to do. And so much growth in online, again, really as a result of COVID, figuring out how to do more offerings online, things that maybe we thought, well, you can't teach that online. You can't teach AMP Lab online. Well, we had to, and now we can.
Yeah.
So, you know, things like that. I don't know that there's, I think I would say it depends who you ask
I bet that's true.
Our athletic programs, you know, speak for themselves. A super dedicated athletic director has been there for a long time, ton of instrumental growth under him. Yeah. Just again, like kind of trying to be everything to everybody.
Yeah.
It's hard. That is taxing on resources, but, we appeal to a wide variety of students.
Yeah. What's your fall enrollment number look like this year?
Well, it's
up 12%.
It's up 12%, but we can't really measure it because the high schools aren't back in session.
Oh.
So they don't submit their paperwork until they start getting back.
I knew there was a reason.
But we're at just below 4,000 students. So we got to get the high school students. The late run we'll have next week because we'll admit after the a first day or two of classes, depending if there's space in the class. Right now, we just don't have a lot of classes left.
Yeah.
And you know, that happens. Yeah. You know, the early bird gets the worm. We tell students that from the get-go.
Yeah.
That's true of housing, of your classes, of your internships, your jobs. And your early bird gets the worm. That's another life lesson to learn while you're with us. But yeah, I love the enrollment questions right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was curious what you were most proud of in your 5 years at the helm at CM.
Students are great. We've talked about all the student success stories. What I think that I have helped continue, which was already in place, was employee development. So which might come in the form of a promotion, and might come in the form of a nudge of obtaining your next credential. We have a strong tuition reimbursement program at the college. We offer up to the associate's degree level, but if you want to go elsewhere, we work with you there. We have had people come for interviews that weren't exactly the best choice for the job they were interviewing for, and talk to them about kind of like what was missing, where they might need to work, some areas they would need to work on, and we have a position that actually is opening up. Would you like a crack at that, or why don't you apply for that? We have an employee right now who, a very young employee, who very much has some, knows what they want to do. But we just need to provide some opportunity to get some experience to get there. And because that person is so driven at knowing what they want to do, and we have the ability to offer some opportunities to help build a resume, we reached out to that person and offered them, you know, a chance at something that we created for them, just because I saw that will pay off for us.
Yeah.
So Central Maine Community College changes students' lives every day, and I think sometimes it gets lost that just how truly we change employees' lives too. When you work on a campus and you show up with college students and it's lively and vibrant and there's a great dining commons and all these facilities and events, and there's regularly like a food truck or a comedian or pizza in the hall. I mean, it's not a bad place to work.
No, right.
Certainly I know folks have their challenges, and you know, we have things we have to figure out, and we don't always agree with each other, but I mean, that's like, you know, any organization.
Yeah. As we get ready to say goodbye, and I appreciate the time and the just like honesty with which you shared your insights today. For anyone listening, what's one message that you hope people carry with them after hearing what you've shared in your story?
I think opportunity. Mm. And if it's something that you think Central Maine Community College could provide for you, to reach out. And that comes in just so many different forms. Mm. Traditional student seeking a degree, someone who wants training in a specific area. If you're an employer listening who has thought, oh, I could upskill some employees in this area, I wonder what they have to offer. If you're someone who's looking for a career change or to begin a career and you'd like to find out about working with us, you know, there's opportunities there. So the one message that I would carry forward is just the opportunity in all the different forms that the Central Maine Community College is able to provide.
So stop by the campus.
Come on over.
What's the website folks should check out?
www.cmcc.edu. And our fall open house is the last Saturday in September. You can come over anytime. You can visit anytime. You can walk into admissions.
You guys are so receptive.
You'll get a tour.
It's true. I'll attest.
Just pull on in the parking lot. But if you want to come to an open house and just walk around on your own or with a tour guide, feel free. Last Saturday, 9 to noon in September. Just a good opportunity to kind of check it out, see what it's about. Yeah. Our culinary students prepare a ton of food.
I do love
we have
part.
Some games going on that day. All of the academic departments have displays out, our faculty representatives to talk to you. It's just, sometimes there's a radio station there. Yeah. It's a good time to come over, but come over anytime.
Yeah. And whether you're working through a senior year with some student who's trying to figure out what their next steps look like, or if you don't have any kids or they've long since left home, that open house could be for you too, right?
Yeah, or you have no interest in enrolling in school, but you just want to come see all the changes. If you haven't not been on our campus in a long time,
that's so true.
It is a brand new place.
Yeah.
Just come over and take a walk. It's really that simple. There's no expectation that you apply or that anyone applies.
Well, and maybe some of the best views of Lake Auburn.
Yeah.
Ever. Yeah. That's exactly right.
You know, it's funny, people that are longtime residents here or have deep connections in the community, it never fails. So I didn't know this was here.
Yeah. You're tucked away down there, which is like perfect if you're living there. And but you can be not front of mind for folks who,
you know, recognize you as the institution you are, but I have no idea that it's like a beautiful campus and there's some really great assets there, great facilities. Your fields are really nice. There's a reason they keep winning all of these different championships.
I started working for Dave Gagne many, many years ago, and I think there were only four sports programs. There was men's and women's basketball, and there was golf, and I think there was baseball, and that was it.
Yeah.
And now I drive on that campus, and I'm like, oh,
hockey,
my God.
Hockey, volleyball, track, cross country.
Yeah.
Is track newer?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have a thrower who's going to CM. He's taking the two free years. I think he's looking at a pathway towards Orono. Was active in throwing throughout all of high school and came home so pumped that it turns out that he will actually be able to throw in college and stay connected to his sport while he while he thinks about what's next, and like, so excited.
And the thing about athletics is great for the athletes, but great for the non-athletes.
Yeah.
There's nothing like one of our basketball games in the middle of January. The concession stand is alive and well. Sometimes we bring in food. Sometimes we have halftime giveaways. We have businesses that come in to promote. Stands are wild. We're handing out T-shirts and lights that people are throwing around. Noisemakers, which the referees don't enjoy. it just brings so much to the campus.
Yeah. So start at the Hope and House and then pick up a game later.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks again for making time.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me today.